सरस्वतीं व्यासं
देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं
ततो जयं मुदीरये
ततो जयं मुदीरये.
Before reciting this Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead, Narayana, unto Nara Narayana Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. By regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam and by rendering of service
to the pure devotee,
all that is troublesome to the heart
is
almost completely destroyed.
And
loving service
unto the personality of Godhead,
who is praised with transcendental songs,
is
established
as an irrevocable fact.
Jai Gantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. Just see, the only qualification Bhagavatam asks us is regular attendance. They don't even say that you must have regular attraction. Just to regularly attend Bhagavatam, we get the chance to render service to the pure devotee. And that we are doing to our spiritual masters. We may not be experts in doing the service to spiritual master, but just by coming regularly to attend, that is the best service we can do. And here, Bhagavatam tells us by doing that, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed. It's almost because we are in the material world. So some remnants are remaining, but it's almost completely destroyed. And instead of that, loving service to Krishna is established within the heart. And this is so nice because it is established not just as a fact, but it is irrevocable. When you say something is irrevocable, it means it cannot be taken back. It is irrevocable. So once it is invested, it will always stay. It is never need. There's no need for you to withdraw from the bank because it is eternal. It is with us. Jai Gantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki.
Jai.
So today we can take one nice verse from 6th canto, 1st chapter, 54th verse. 6154. Yes, 6154. Six, 6154. Labdhva nimittam avyaktam.
Labdhva nimittam avyaktam.
Vyakta vyaktam bhavati uta.
Vyakta vyaktam bhavati uta.
Yatha yoni yatha bijam.
Yatha yoni yatha bijam.
Swabhavena baliyasa.
Swabhavena baliyasa.
Labdhva nimittam avyaktam.
Labdhva nimittam avyaktam.
Vyakta vyaktam bhavati uta.
Vyakta vyaktam bhavati uta.
Yata yoni yatha bijam.
Yata yoni yatha bijam.
Swabhavena baliyasa.
वरीयसा
स्वभावेन वरीयसा
लब्ध्वा निमित्तम अव्यक्तम
लब्ध्वा निमित्तम अव्यक्तम
व्यक्ता व्यक्तम भवत्युत
व्यक्ता व्यक्तम भवत्युत
यथा योनि यथा बीजम
यथा योनि यथा बीजम
स्वभावेन बलीयसा
स्वभावेन बलीयसा
लब्ध्वा निमित्तम् अव्यक्तम्
लब्ध्वा निमित्तम् अव्यक्तम्
व्यक्तम् अव्यक्तम् भवति युता
व्यक्तम् अव्यक्तम् भवति युता
यथा योगी यथा बीजम्
यथा योनी यथा बीजम्
स्वभावेन बलीयसा
स्वभावेन बलीयसा
लब्ध्वा निमित्तम् अव्यक्तम्
लब्ध्वा निमित्तम् अव्यक्तम्
व्यक्ता व्यक्तम् भवति युता
व्यक्ता व्यक्तम् भवति युता
यथा योनी यथा बीजम्
यथा योनी यथा बीजम्
स्वभावेन बलीयसा
स्वभावेन बलीयसा
लब्ध्वा निमित्तम् अव्यक्तम्
लब्ध्वा निमित्तम् अव्यक्तम्
व्यक्ता अव्यक्तम् भवति उत
व्यक्ता व्यक्तम् भवति उता
यथा योनि यथा बीजम्
यथा योनि यथा बीजम्
स्वभावेन बलीयसा
स्वभावेन बलीयसा
व्यक्ता व्यक्तम्
भवति उत
यथा योनि यथा बीजम्
स्वभावेन बलीयसा
माताजीस्
लब्ध्वा निमित्तम् अव्यक्तम् व्यक्ता व्यक्तम् भवति युत यथा योनि यथा बीजम् स्वभावेन बलीयसा लब्ध्वा निमित्तम् अव्यक्तम् व्यक्ता व्यक्तम् भवति युत यथा योनि यथा बीजम् स्वभावेन बलीयसा
लब्ध्वा
लब्ध्वा
इट्स ओके
लब्ध्वा निमित्तम् अव्यक्तम् व्यक्त्वा व्यक्तम् भवति युत यथा योनि यथा बीजम् स्वभावेन बलीयसा
Please read the synonyms. You know, in many congregations around the world, it is a dream to get anyone to repeat. In Abu Dhabi, it is difficult to stop. this is really Maharaj's legacy. You know? Maharaj taught us the value of chanting shlokas. If we could, we would get everyone to chant. It's just that according to time, sometimes it's not possible. But we should never stop our love for chanting verses. Never. Because more than anything else, this is the legacy of Maharaj, that he really, really instilled in all of us that maybe we don't have taste, but at least we know the importance now of chanting the shlokas, and the shlokas are non-different from Krishna. Just by chanting shloka, reading purport and closing Bhagavatam, a class is actually complete. It is complete. There's nothing else to say. So it's a very nice phenomenon, you know. Please keep this up, you know. It's very nice. Labdhwa.
Labdhwa.
Having gotten. Nimittam.
Nimittam.
The cause.
Avyaktam.
Avyaktam.
Unseen. Or unknown to the person.
Unknown to the person.
Vyakta avyaktam.
Vyakta avyaktam.
Manifested.
And
unmanifested.
And unmanifested.
Or the gross body. And the subtle body. Bhavati.
Bhavati.
Come into being.
Uta.
Certainly. Yathayoni.
Yathayoni.
Exactly like the father, like
exactly
the mother.
Like the father.
Sorry, exactly like the mother.
Exactly like the mother.
Yatha bijam.
Yatha bijam.
Exactly like the father.
Exactly like the father.
Swabhavena.
Swabhavena.
By the natural tendency. Baliyasa.
Baliyasa.
Which is very powerful. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada.
Jai Srila Prabhupada.
Please repeat. The fruitive activities
a living being performs
whether pious or impious
are the unseen cause
for the fulfillment of his desires.
This unseen cause
is the root
for the living entity's different bodies.
Because of his intense desire,
the living entity
takes birth
in a particular family
and receives a body
which is either like that
of his mother
or like that of his father.
The gross and subtle bodies
are created
according to his desire. Let us hear the purport. The gross body is a product of the subtle body. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 8.6, Yam yam vapi smaram bhavam jajatiyante kalevaram tam tam evaiti kaunteya sadatat bhava bhavitaha. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, that state he will attain without fail. The atmosphere of the subtle body at the time of death is created by the activities of the gross body. Thus, the gross body acts during one's lifetime, and the subtle body acts at the time of death. The subtle body, which is called linga, the body of desire, is the background for the development of a particular type of gross body, which is either like that of one's mother or like that of one's father. According to the Rig Veda, if at the time of sex the secretions of the mother are more profuse than those of the father, the child will receive a female body. And if the secretions of the father are more profuse than those of the mother, the child will receive a male body. These are the subtle laws of nature which act according to the desire of the living entity. If a human being is taught to change his subtle body by developing a consciousness of Krishna, at the time of death the subtle body will create a gross body in which he will become a devotee of Lord Krishna. I'll repeat this nice sentence. If a human being is taught to change his subtle body by developing a consciousness of Krishna, at the time of death, the subtle body will create a gross body in which he will be a devotee of Krishna. Or, if he is still more perfect, he will not take another material body, but will immediately get a spiritual body and thus return home back to Godhead. This is the process of the transmigration of the soul. Therefore, instead of trying to unite human society through pacts for sense gratification, it can never be achieved. It is clearly desirable to teach people how to become Krishna conscious and return home back to Godhead. This is true now and indeed at any time. Jai Shri Prabhupada, transcendental purport ki. Such a beautiful verse, such a beautiful purport. Om Ajnanatimirandasya
Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovisham Tapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Dhamayam Dadati Svapadantimam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yukatapanam Shri Guru Vaishnavamcha Shirupam Sagrajatam Saganaratam Nikantam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Chaitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shirata Krishna Padam Saganaratava Shri Vishata Vitamsha E Krishna Karna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Vanta Namostre Tatta Kanchana Gaurangi Adhe Ravaneshwari Vrishamanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Pye Vancha Kalpataru Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyarevacha Padilana Parnevyo Vaishnavya Devyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Jivasavi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
This is such a delicate balance.
We can keep it here.
Sorry. This verse is very wonderful because while the pastimes of the Lord are definitely relishable, before we are qualified to understand the pastimes of Krishna, it is very important for us to understand who we are, what is the nature of our life. That's why Maharaj always taught us that we have to be very down to earth in the process of receiving this transcendental knowledge. And the first point that is stated in 6154, and this is, of course, it is all about actually Ajamil. And this is actually the history of the life of Ajamil. But just before that, you know, we find that Shukadeva Goswami is speaking so much about all the different powerful points to do with the movement of the living entities. And the Yamadutas are the ones who speak this verse actually, because the Yamadutas are now speaking about the history of Ajamil. And in trying to explain the history of Ajamil to the Vishnu Dutas, they are speaking actually Bhagavatam. So this point that they say here is very nice. There is a distinction between the gross and the subtle body. And what this verse is telling us is, the root of why we remain in this material world, Prabhupada writes in the purport, is actually because of our intense desire. This is the main reason why we are here. This icha, this desire is very strong. Whatever we desire, Krishna has given us the facility to fulfill that desire. We actually think in this material world that all our desires cannot be fulfilled. But we don't realize that they are being fulfilled. It's just a question of which life they are being fulfilled. And the problem with that intense desire for sense gratification is that the materialist may ask the question, how can I be suffering the fruitive results of my previous activities when my body dies? You know, the materialist always advances this argument, Bhagavatam says. In the 4th canto, 29th chapter, Narada Muni's conversation with King Prajinabad, he said, Narada Muni addresses this argument. He says that the materialists always ask this question. You say that we are now suffering the results of our previous activities or enjoying. But how can that be? Because body is dead. So that body doesn't bring to it another body. But here Bhagavatam tells us very clearly that whatever that you desire, you will become. Because your desire translates into consciousness. That's how consciousness comes into being. Consciousness is nothing more than a projection of one's desire. This is a very, very important point we must remember. Jai Radha Damodar Ji Ki. This desire translates into consciousness, and at the end of the life, as Prabhupada writes in the purport, whatever state of consciousness we are, which is composed of all our desires, that desire then is carried by our subtle body, because gross body dies. But subtle body, made up of mind, intelligence and ego, it transplants this desire from that gross body to the next body. And the next body is being formed even as we live now. based on the desires that we are accumulating in our minds. So supposing in this life, you know, I'm in Singapore, I really want to stay in Abu Dhabi and I can't make it. Then not to worry. Krishna says, since you want to be Abu Dhabi conscious, not Krishna conscious, but Abu Dhabi conscious, there's a difference. Eh? Then what happens is, in this life you can't fulfill. Krishna ensures by the material nature's working, mind, intelligence, ego will carry this desire from subtle body. And while we are speaking and talking in Singapore, there is facility for another gross body to be made ready for Abu Dhabi when this gross body is finished. So then my subtle body moves. And by the arrangement of the Lord and my previous fruitive activities, I will take a body which is just suited for Abu Dhabi. Just suited for Abu Dhabi. And I will be born in Abu Dhabi then. And I will live and suffer and enjoy and everything that comes with Abu Dhabi. And because I did not want to be Krishna conscious in Abu Dhabi, again now I will find some other desire. Now I want to be in Canada. I want to be in America. And so once again the subtle body takes that imprint of the desire, captures it like a photo, carries with it, and now another body is being made. Maharaj told me once, for every desire you have in your heart in this life, one body is ready now in your next life. Every desire, Maharaj said, apart from Krishna conscious desires, every material desire will be fulfilled. Don't worry, Maharaj said. You know, he said in a very diabolical fashion. Then. It was not merciful way. He was saying, don't worry. Since you all want to enjoy, right? Every moment of your enjoyment that you can't enjoy here, one body is created for you to enjoy there. So just suffer your enjoyment, he said. Suffer your enjoyment. So this is the fact. And 6154 proves that point. How we take birth is also given here. Bharat Maharaj, you remember, you know, Jadabharat was his last life. But before that he was the king, emperor of the whole world. And he was leading a very, very Krishna conscious life up to the last point when his attachment and compassion overtook him and he ended up having so much love for a deer. And no doubt he had his pious stock of activities. But at the last moment of his life, as Prabhupada writes here, his consciousness was deer consciousness. Not D-A-R, but D-E-E-R. And because the deer was very dear to him, then naturally he became a deer in his next life. That's what he became. Puranjana in 4th canto was so much enamored by his wife. So at the time when the serpent of time came and took over the city of 9 gates, we read that Puranjana had no one to think about but his wife. And when he thought of his wife, in the next life, he became Puranjani. He became the female side of Puranjana. So, Prabhupada writes here that whatever gross body has, gross body is not the problem. It is the subtle body that's the problem. Because the subtle body creates the gross body. Gross body is just an expression or a reflection of what the subtle body wants. So the consciousness at which we are having now, it is coming from our past imprints. And even at the point of birth, the gross body and the subtle body comes. But it is subtle body that comes first. And the subtle body creates the gross body. This is an important point for us to understand. In the 4th canto, 29th chapter, if you start from 60th verse onwards, up to about 70th verse, if you have time, you should read them. There, Narada Muni really explains in detail this whole science of the gross and subtle body. And he says that whenever we act in the gross body in any life, like we are now acting in the gross body in this life. Sorry, Prabhuji? Oh, it's 4th canto, 29th chapter, 60th verse onwards. 4:29:60. Whenever you act in the gross body in this life, it is because you are acting based on the demands of the subtle body from your previous life. This is the first point Narada Muni says. The second point he says, after the gross body is lost, the subtle body then, it continues to carry the desire that it had in the gross body. And when that happens, the gross body becomes the instrument for the enjoyment of the subtle body. And once the enjoyment factor is there, when the gross body is finished in the form of death, the stockpile of desires that we have in our heart, they are imprinted in the subtle body. And so based on whatever we desired, the subtle body then moves to the next gross body to fulfill that desire. It creates another situation where you can actually satisfy what your mind, intelligence and ego wants. Narada Muni gave the example of, in this life, we can see the example when we are dreaming. Most of us at some point will have had dreams, you know. Though as devotees we find, I don't know about you, but after I started practicing more Krishna consciousness, I dreamt less. But before I used to dream a lot. And I realized after reading 4th Canto 29 chapter why there are dreams actually. Because Prabhupada gives the example that even in this life, when you go to sleep in the night, supposing you dream of flying, but of course you can't fly, you're grounded. So what happens is when you go to sleep, the desire for flying takes flight in your subtle body. So in your subtle body, the subtle body becomes free of the gross body when it's dreaming. And the mind, intelligence and ego, they build up castles in the air. They give you a dream world where everything is wonderful, you are a hero, and everything is going very nicely. All the things you cannot do here, you dream. All the things you are fearful of, that is going to happen, you also dream. So the subtle body takes your desires, takes your fears, and it imprints it in a subtle way. So in that subtle body, for the whole night, you are living your dream. And it appears as if you are actually doing that. But in the morning, the subtle body gets back to the gross body, so to speak. And at that point in time, when you wake up, you realize that you are back to where you were. Even in our life now, Narada Muni says, you can actually differentiate the subtle body from the gross. Then what to speak of death? What to speak of death? At death, there is a clean cut. This is clean cut. That is why it is stated that the gross body is not the problem. It is the subtle body. And if it's subtle body, the continuation of the desires that we have in our hearts, they continue life after life after life. Life after life. They don't stop now. They don't stop. And for every desire you have, another body is created to fulfill that desire. Somehow or another, we must have desired something to do with Krishna. So that by the mercy of the Lord, our subtle body has arranged that our bodies now are becoming more fine-tuned to Krishna consciousness. See how important it is that somehow or another, the subtle body from the previous life must have had a glimpse of devotional service. And the previous life before that. And how did this come? It must have come the same way Prachina Barhisit was experiencing his life. It came because he contacted himself with a pure devotee of the Lord. And we also must have somehow or another, our subtle body must have come into contact with some principle of devotional service. Otherwise, we will not be here. So, the good thing about it is that we know now what the desires are. We know how the desires move from one body to another body. But the point that we must understand also is that the change in the subtle body is more important than the change in the gross body. This is the thing to be understood from this verse. The first important point to be understood. Because we know the principle now. We know gross body. We know subtle body. We know how it moves. We know how each and every desire apart from satisfying Krishna is building another material body to make us suffer in this world. Because the truth is nobody is enjoying. Everyone wants to enjoy, but the real harsh truth is outside, nobody is enjoying. Everyone is trying to find the source of the enjoyment, but we all know it is temporary. Just like you take paracetamol, temporary cessation of your headache. Just for a while the headache goes, but it doesn't mean the headache is not there. It is suppressed, but it exists. So our desires are there. They are suppressed at the moment on the basis of Krishna consciousness. But if we are not careful, they will flare up again. Under the flag of Krishna consciousness, we will again assume the same ideas. But it is to satisfy ourselves and not Krishna. The moment you come from Krishna consciousness and you say, Prabhu, I want to dance in Kirtan because I want to satisfy myself, then that desire is hidden desire. I want something from Krishna. But because Krishna consciousness is very pious activity, so it is better that I accumulate good pious activity. So let me at least dance for the Lord, but actually The real reason for me to dance is I'm dancing for myself. I want to study nice shlokas, not because of the glorification of the Lord, but because the truth is I want people to turn around and say, Prabhu, you have mastered the shlokas very nicely. You know how to give good classes. This is very nice. So that is our hidden desire. And we carry it with us also. We carry it with us. So the point Bhagavatam tells us is that this change in the subtle body is more important than the gross body. And in this regard, Maharaj always made us remember this verse from Rishabhdev in 5.5.4 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Nunam pramantam kurute vikarma yad indriya pritaya abrivnoti na sadhu manye yata admanoyam asannapi kleshada ashadeha. 5.5.4 of Srimad Bhagavatam. And the translation is a very important translation. Because nunam pramattam kurute vikarma. The first line tells us everything we need to know about this verse. Why? Because there Rishabhdev says very nicely, when a person considers sense gratification, his aim of life, he will definitely engage in sinful activities to satisfy that sense gratification. See how nicely Prabhupada has translated. When a person considers sense gratification his aim of life, not glorification of Krishna, but glorification or gratification of his senses, his aim of life, then whatever field he may be in, whatever guise he may be in, he may even look like a devotee, but if in his heart of hearts he wants to satisfy his senses, then Rishabhdev tells us that activity will actually spur him to commit the sinful activities. Because vikarma, sinful activities, simply mean forgetfulness of Krishna. The moment we perform prajalpa, the moment we speak about anything and do anything apart from Krishna, that activity is sinful. The result of that a sinful activity is nunam pramattam. We become mad. We become mad. And when we are mad, again we perform the sinful activities. See how dangerous it is. And when that happens, Rishabhdev tells us that he does not know, this living entity does not know, that it is due to his past misdeeds that he has gotten this gross body in the first place. We have not gotten this gross body because it was a reward from Krishna. No. If it was a reward from Krishna, we'll be flying in Krishna Loka and we'll be dancing and we'll be serving the Lord in his spiritual kingdom. But we are in the material kingdom. And because we are here, we have forgotten. We don't realize that it is our past misdeeds that have given us this body, our past sinful activities that has made us into this body. And now we don't realize that although this body is temporary, it is actually the cause of the misery now. Because of our desires, it has now been fructified in the form of misery. So then Rishabhdev concludes by saying, as long as the living entity continues to think that he should actually continue sense gratification, then he will continue to have a gross body. And his subtle body will continue to create more and more and more gross bodies. So he ends by saying, any sane gentleman, right, any sane gentleman should stop this cycle of desires. He should stop it now so that he immediately becomes free from the cycle of birth and death. Prabhu's Matajis, this is what we must have in our hearts. With the sword of transcendental knowledge, it is time now to become even more fixed in the fact that our approach to devotional service should not have motivation. This material motivation is what binds us even as devotees. It is what gives us problems even as devotees. That is why we are trying so hard many years maybe, but we are constantly frustrated because we don't seem to be getting any taste. We're just dragging ourselves up for Mangala Arati, dragging ourselves to do everything. Nobody says, very seldom we say, we finish 16 rounds and we say, what 16 rounds? I'm relishing it, let me chant more. All we want to think about is finish the 16 rounds. That's why Maharaj said, the moment you say, have you finished? Yeah, I finished. The implication is, whatever you did is not something you want to do. That's why you say, I'm finished. You know? And when we finish 16 rounds, Maharaj says, it's a day of great exuberance. We're very happy. Oh, I finished 16 rounds. But for the devotee, he wants more. But we say, no, 16 rounds is enough. More than enough. You know. But we forget, Prabhupada said, all of us must chant a minimum of 16 rounds. Prabhupada never said maximum 16 rounds. Prabhupada said minimum 16 rounds. And here we are making 16 rounds the max of the maximum. So this is because the desires from our subtle body are impeding our progress, because the mind, the intelligence and the ego is not with Krishna. Narada Muni also tells us the reason why we get dreams. He says that the dreams, in the purport, he says very nicely, when we dream of flying an airplane, it is actually the stockpile of our material desires which we have not fulfilled yet. It's an indication to us that we want another body so that we can become a pilot. So that way, what happens to a devotee? Narada Muni says devotional service is so powerful. And this is what the Yamadutas will realize about the devotional service of Ajamil. Devotional service is so powerful that despite the fact that you may have some material desires, Prabhupada writes in that purport of in 429, 62 or 63, he says that even if a devotee has material desires subtly, the Lord is so kind that in his dream, in the devotee's dream, the Lord fulfills all his desires. Just in the dream, the devotee gets some experience he has never had. And in that experience, the devotee wakes up to think, I've never had this experience, why am I thinking? But the Lord is doing that so that the whole stockpile of material desires are quickly dissolved. Dissolved. And then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is quoted by Srila Prabhupada in his purport, where he says that sometimes great devotees are given this benediction. Yashoda Mata was an example. Yashoda Mata, for example, when Lord Krishna opened his mouth as a small boy because she wanted to check the dirt was in his mouth, what did she see? Krishna gave her the benediction of seeing the entire universe. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said that was her desire. She had some desire to see the whole manifestation of the Lord. And she found it in her own son's mouth. And this desire was given a chance to be fulfilled by Krishna so that it will not impede the devotee's spiritual progress. See the kindness of the Lord. So if you take up Krishna consciousness, then the desires of the subtle body, automatically they start dissolving. They start dissolving. This is a fact in Krishna consciousness. It is a fact. So having understood that point, the real thing that we must control now is not the gross body. You know, just like we always say, four regulative principles we have to keep. Many of us have given up the four regulative principles. But, as Maharaj always warns us, the gross form of the regulative principles may be kept. But the subtle form still remain as residue in our hearts and our lifestyle. And because they are subtle, we don't see them so fast. They come in the form of pride, in the form of name and fame, in the form of adoration, in the form of envy, in the form of criticisms, in the form of blasphemy. All these are subtle forms that show that the four regulated principles are still being broken. We may not have illicit connections, but we are having the illicit connections in our heads and our hearts. We may not want to eat meat, but our violent tendencies continue, and they are exhibited in our treatment of devotees and other living entities. We may not eat them, but in one way we are also hurting them. So like that, Maharaj was very careful to warn us that being in the company of devotees, we should be very cautious about our subtle desires. The subtle desires will drag us down. And the way we behave will often be reflected finally in our gross consciousness. Then the devotees will exhibit undevotee-like character. And that is where sometimes devotees become fried, they become disgusted, they lose their courage, because they say, why devotees are behaving like this? We left everything to come here so that we can try to be devotees. And over here, same politics is there but different form. Same prajalpa is there but different form. Right? And because they are all reacting with each other, and which is separate from the vision of the Lord, then they are causing dushtita matihi. The oscillation of the mind causes us agitation. Just like the boat in the water is agitated because it is not firmly anchored to Krishna. So if subtle body is not anchored to Krishna, then it is very hard for gross body to move with Krishna. That is why we are in difficulty always, because this mind is real problem child. The mind is the root cause of every problem. What is that verse in 5:11:17? bratavyamenam tadabhadravīryam upekshaya apramattam adityam. Pramattam, the nature of mind is to make you mad. The nature of mind is so powerful and all-devouring that if you neglect to bring it under the control of devotional service, it will grow and grow and grow more and more. Jadabharat says to Rahugana that it will consume you. It will consume you. And there is only one solution for that. The only solution to that, Bhagavatam tells us, is to firmly take shelter of the lotus feet of Guru and Harihi. Guru Harihi Charanapashanastro Jahi Vyalikam Swayamatma Mosham. The only way to conquer this mind is to let it rest at the lotus feet of the service to Guru and service to spiritual master. That's why, Prabhus and Matajis, you'll find as long as we are sitting here now, we are free of the onslaughts of the mind. Why? Because this is service to the Lord. The Lord loves the fact that devotees are trying to relish Bhagavatam. In our limited capacity, we are trying. Krishna is happy. Our mind is free. Subtle body has no desires at this point of time. And because there is no desire now, no material body is being created. We are free. But the moment we step out of Prabhu's house, then the moment we see a nice car passing by, we think, this is a nice car. Maybe next year I should get another car. You know, my car is getting old. Now supposing for some reason you can't get this car now, in your next life you have to come back just to get this car in Abu Dhabi. Is it really, really, really necessary? That's the key we have to ask. That is the key. Supposing I want to be a student and I'm studying very hard. I'm studying and I find once I study I reach a point where I'm not satisfied with my grades. I never take it that it is the sanction of the Lord finally, the results. So in the next life I will get a nice body. So that I become an exemplary student and get the grades that I could not get in my last life. Is it necessary? Just think about it. Is it necessary? So like that, in the name of Krishna consciousness, in the name of performing our obligations and prescribed duties, we are actually letting our senses run wild. And then we say, no, Prabhu, it's my prescribed duty. I'm working very hard, you know, I have to do this, I have to do that. But only Krishna knows whether you're working hard just to fulfill your duty, or you're working hard because you love working hard and you like to get the results that come from working hard. Only Krishna knows that. So the solution then is that we must understand one thing, that there is no other reason for our misery in this world, no other reason for coming back in this world except the dictations of the mind. It is the mind that is the cause of your misery, Prabhus Matajis. Don't blame anyone in this world. Please don't blame any situation in this world. Please don't blame any circumstances in the world. Just blame your mind every time you are in difficulty. Please don't blame husbands. Husbands don't blame wives. Wives don't blame children. Husbands don't blame mother-in-laws, parent-in-laws. Nobody should blame anybody. Because Bhagavatam 11 Canto 23 chapter 42nd verse gives us definitively that it is the mind that is the cause of the misery. Nayam janome sukaduka hetu na devatatma graha karma kalaha manaparam karanama mananti samsara chakram parivartayetyat. This verse we should remember very well. Why? Because here Bhagavatam advances the point that tells us very clearly that it is only the mind that is causing the problem. Because in this song, the people are not the cause of your happiness or distress. The demigods are not the reason for your happiness and distress. Time is not the reason for happiness and distress. The grahas are not the reason for the happiness and distress. Other living entities, past work, none of this is the reason for your happiness and distress. It is only the mind alone that causes happiness and distress. It is the mind, see it is correct, that perpetuates the problems of our life. Nothing else. If you say that it is people causing this, Bhagavatam tells us that how can it be people? People can only cause problem to the gross body. But you are spirit soul. So how can people affect the spirit soul? Spirit soul cannot be slain, cannot be killed, cannot be burned. You mean a living entity can then affect the spirit soul? No. It is affecting your material body. And Bhagavatam gives us a good example that finally we are all part and parcel of Krishna. If someone bites his tongue, if he bites his tongue, whom is he going to blame? Sometimes you have bitten your tongue, right? After biting your tongue, do you shout at your wife? Hopefully not. Just think, we bite our tongue, we get angry, you know, because it's pain. Do we shout at others? Whom to blame? You bit your own tongue, you can't slap yourself, you can't bite off your tongue for biting your tongue. What are you going to do? So people are not the cause of your misery. Why you turn that way? Don't turn in that direction. The devas. We say the devas, you know, Indra controls your hand, Brahma controls your head. You know, so if I slap my child, oh, it's not me, it's Indra actually who slapped. What can I do, you know? It's like that, you know. This kind of things is happening, you know, it happens. So when we think that way, we think that the devas are doing this. But Bhagavatam tells us very nicely that if one limb of the body is attacking the other, can the body blame any of the limbs? How to blame the body? One limb is attacking the other, you can't blame anyone. So whether the demigods or you, you're all part and parcel of one creation. You can't point fingers at anyone to say that he's hurting me, because you're all part of the supreme whole. Then the third point is very nice. The third point says that we cannot become angry with others, because this anger is only coming as a manifestation of the gross and subtle body. Soul knows no anger. Soul cannot understand this anger. So whom are we going to be angry with? It defeats the purpose. Then we talk about planets. You know, sometimes, you know, even as devotees, it becomes a subtle problem. We are devotees, we say we have full faith in Krishna. Suddenly time is not right. Very quietly we call, is there some astrologer we know? Let's go and check, you know. Something must be there. I was told, you know, that this planet, time is not good. There's one devotee, our god brother in Kerala, you know, who has been giving so much trouble. He will not obey what Maharaj has been telling him. Just do his own things. Finally, when I met him in Kerala, I asked him, Prabhuji, why you are doing all this? He said, Prabhu, I went to see my astrologer. At this time, the grahas are not in the good position. For 7 years, I will not obey my spiritual master. So it is the grahas, you know. No, it's not my fault, Prabhu. He told me that on my face. I could not believe it. In all the world, in all my experience, I've never heard such an innovative argument. Truly innovative. And immediately I thought of this verse. We are blaming the grahas for the fact that we cannot wake up for Mangalarti. For the fact that, you know, this time is not right, Prabhu. That's why my devotion is not picking up. I'm told after this time, Guru will be in my planet, and once Guru is there, I'll become pure devotee. Grahas don't affect us as devotees or pure devotees. So why to take the advice of the grahas? And the planets themselves don't know where they are moving until Krishna gives them the understanding to move. So how can they affect us? How can they affect us? And Maharaj was telling this point, you know, we take these stones, you know, we say these stones are from, you know, they actually derive from the planets. Maharaj said, a small stone drops from the planet, you put it on your finger, and it's supposed to affect your lifestyle. How is it possible? So that's why Maharaj said, you know, that really, as devotees, we lack the faith. We really think that when all things are bad, we try everything, you know, and when everything goes, again we have to come back to Krishna. So grahas are not the cause of our miseries. Don't say sunny dosham, this dosham, that dosham. Once we are devotees, the only dosham is forgetfulness of Krishna. There is one graha on its own. It's not in Navagraha, it's one special graha, our forgetfulness of Krishna. Then we complain about the past work. Past activities are affecting us. But Bhagavatam has a very, very, very smart argument. Bhagavatam tells us, past work can only affect your body. But you are not body. So how can past work affect you? Isn't it? It's not supposed to affect you. But because you think you are body, it is affecting you. Misidentification. And the last point is very nice. We say all the time that time is affecting us. Time is not good, Prabhu. And we quote Bhagavatam. Because Krishna told the demigods, you know, when he was going to fight, you know, Krishna himself said, time is not on your side. So we say, see, Bhagavatam says, so time is not my, it's not my fault. It's not my fault. But Bhagavatam counters that by saying, time is Krishna. And for a devotee who utilizes his time for Krishna, time is his friend. So how can time affect us? How can time affect us? So actually, at the end of the day, the subtle body is the problem child. And in the subtle body, the leader is the mind. If the mind is kept in check with Krishna, through the weapon of Guruho, Harihi, Charana, Pashan, Ashtro, then this problem of identification will not be there. It will not be there. So the conclusion to this verse is very wonderful. In 4.29.69, Maharaj made me write down this definition of Krishna consciousness in 4.29.69. I'll read it. Krishna consciousness means constantly associating with Krishna in such a mental state that the devotee can observe the cosmic manifestation exactly as Krishna does. What a powerful definition of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness means constantly associating with Krishna in such a mental state that the devotee can observe the cosmic manifestation the way Krishna does. So I was very bewildered and I asked Maharaj, Maharaj, what does this mean? And Maharaj said, very simple. We must accept the plan of Krishna. Then we are observing the manifestation of the world the way Krishna is. That is all. And I think if I meditated on this line for the rest of my life, I would never understand this point until Maharaj said it. This is the difference between realization and knowledge. Maharaj just said, it simply means this, that we must always see and accept the plan of Krishna. Seeing the plan of Krishna is not enough. Maharaj said, we say we want to see the hand of Krishna. After seeing, you must accept. If after you see, you reject, you are back again to difficulty. But after seeing, when you accept, then you are seeing the world as Krishna wants you to see. Then your vision and the vision of the Lord are in one line. And when that happens, then there is no dushtita matihi. There is no oscillation of the mind. There is peace. Imagine if husband and wife are not having the same interest in the house. What is the result? Kurukshetra. In the same way, when we don't cooperate with the material energy of the Lord, instead we exploit it, then our vision is separate. Material energy will consume us. If we cooperate with material energy, we come under spiritual energy. Such a beautiful formula. And once we are under spiritual energy of the Lord, subtle body's desires automatically are taken care of by Krishna consciousness. Because devotional service is so powerful that it can dissolve. It can dissolve very naturally all material desires at one go without separate endeavor, Bhagavatam tells us. It is Devahuti Mata is told by Kapila Dev. It is in the third canto. It is only two lines. It is the verse which has only two lines, right? And in that line, it is very nicely stated that this bhakti can do without separate endeavor. No separate endeavor is required. Just do the nice chanting, do the sincere reading, do it to glorify Krishna, then the devotional service becomes unmotivated. The moment something is unmotivated, what follows? Uninterruption. If you want to be uninterrupted in devotional service, Bhagavatam gives us the secret that you become unmotivated. If you come to Prabhuji's house to glorify Krishna, Krishna will give you uninterrupted time with Him. If you come here to just glorify yourself or to satisfy some desire, then for a while you will be given a chance. But after a while there will be some reason. Prabhu, I cannot come because of this. I can't come because of that. I can't do this. I can't do that. And we don't realize, as Maharaj says, we are not the ones churning the excuses. Now, because you have neglected Krishna, unfortunately the reactions are there. And you will find that because the devotional service is motivated, the obstacles start coming into your lives. That's why Prabhupada said in the purport of 6.16.34, he said that between ahaituki and apritihata, it is the unmotivated devotional service that allows you to continuously chant Krishna's names. If you want kirtaniya sadahari, then please, the motive in the heart must go. And only when the motive of the heart, when the motive is gone, then the devotee exhibits all the qualities of Trinat api sunichena, taror api sahishnuna, amanina manadena. Then only he can do kirtaniya sadahari. That's why you see, you can watch Prabhu's Matajis, you see the devotees who are genuinely humble. You see the devotees who genuinely do not want prestige for themselves, ready to offer obeisances, always tolerant. You find these devotees are the ones who are continuously coming for the programs, Continuously, Krishna is giving them chance to do devotional service year after year after year. Why this is happening? It is not by accident. It is because the principle of devotional service is being applied. This is the beauty of it. So 4.29.69 is very important. And there is one nice story I can relate with you before we end this point in Bhagavatam. You know, one time there is a story in Dwarka where one time there was this sweeper, you know, in Dwarkadish temple. Maharaj told me this story. He said one time there was a sweeper in Dwarkadish temple and he was always very sincere sweeper. So every time he used to see thousands of people coming to take darshan of Dwarkadish. And every time when he saw, he always used to think, Dwarkadish must be very tired, you know. Imagine standing there all the time and just giving darshan. It's difficult, isn't it? So like that, you know, Maharaj was saying that one day the sweeper desired in his heart, he spoke to Dwarkadish at the end day and said, Dwarkadish, if you want, I can take your place for a day. Very innocently, you know, really from the heart. You know, he was just thinking, so difficult. Radha Damodar is just sitting there, light is always on him. If light is always on us, how will we feel, you know? So like that he was, oh, Radha? Radha, I just keep thinking of Prabhu's name. So like that, we just keep thinking, you know, he was very innocent and he was thinking that somehow or another, I must try and do something. So sincerely he said, Dwarkadish, can I do some seva? And Dwarkadish spoke to him and said, all right, I don't mind taking a break for a day. Let's do one thing. You stand just like me, okay? And I'll transform you into a very good, you know, image of me. Then I'll take the position of sweeper for a day. At least I'm free. But you must do only one thing. He said, what is the condition? You just stand there like that and you smile at everyone and just give benediction all the time. Okay? Don't interfere with anything. Don't say anything. You're not supposed to. Your deity at least, you know. Just stand there. People will get really ecstatic when they see deities walking, interacting, everything. So just stand there. Okay? No matter what happens, just be there. You just have faith in me. You just have faith that I have a master plan for everything. So he thought, alright, can't be so difficult. I've seen Dwarkadish is always sitting there doing, he's standing there, you know, he's doing very nice benediction. Alright, I'll do it. So then what happens? So in the morning, he starts his shift. Dwarkadish is free. No one knows, of course, that the sweeper has become Dwarkadish, so to speak. One rich man comes in and he says, you know, he comes and prays to Dwarkadish. He says, Dwarkadish, you know, today, please, I'm giving you nice donation. You know, please make my business prosper. Make it good. So the sweeper is Dwarkadish, remembered Dwarkadish's instruction, and he said, all right, you know, tatastu, whatever you want, so be it, you know. Not very difficult, it's quite easy, you know. Then the man starts walking away, but he's left his wallet full of money right there next to Dwarkadish. Now Dwarkadish thought, hey, I should tell him you left your wallet. Then I'm now deity, you know, I'm not supposed to say anything, you know, that was the deal. So he said, all right, doesn't matter, now I better keep quiet now. Then he was thinking, I better report this to Dwarkadish. What happens to the wallet? Just then, one very poor man came. He comes, he puts in one coin. And he says, Dwarkadish, this is all I can afford. But please bless me that I will remain in devotional service. But only one thing I have in my heart, I don't want to ask you. But the fact is, my family is in really dire need of some food and some basic needs. And times are very difficult. I'm leaving it in your good hands, Lord. If you want, you will give me a solution. He closed his eyes and he prayed. He opened his eyes and in front of him was the wallet. And he thought, Dwarkadish, you're so kind. Just I closed my eyes, I opened my eyes and the wallet is there. So he said, please, thank you so much. Very innocently he took it. Dwarkadish was going to say, it's not your wallet. Then he thought, nah, I can't say that. You know, he said, this life is very difficult. Not easy, you know. So he just stands there and he says, you know, give the benediction. He has to smile, you know, because if Krishna doesn't smile, who will come to the temple? Imagine, you know. So he's smiling. Now, just at that point of time, a sailor walks in. You know, Dwarka is seaport, you know. So sailor walks into Dwarka, Dwarkadish. And sailor is very happy. He says, Dwarkadish, please give me blessings now. Because now I am going to go very far away. And I'm going to go to the far land. And in that land, I will have to work. Please pray that I have a safe journey on the ship. You know, that's all I pray to you. Lord, because no one can protect me. Only you. Krishna Krishna Mahabaho Bhakta Nam Abhayankara Twameko Dayamana Nam Abhavargo Si Samshite. So after chanting some nice verses, he's going to go. At that point of time, the rich man comes in with some police. He's looking around. He says, somebody has stolen my wallet. Police, there was only one man here. That man, that sailor, you catch him. He's the one that must have stolen my wallet. Sailor doesn't know what has happened. Dwarkadish is confused now. Dwarkadish said, no, it's not the sailor, it's that poor man who ran out. Police go and chase him, but I can't say anything. So he keeps quiet, but he's becoming frustrated now. So the police come and arrest the sailor. Sailor says, what did I do? The man accuses the sailor of stealing. But sailor said, I didn't do anything. Sailor turns to Dwarkadish and says, Dwarkadish, what is this? Dwarkadish feels like saying, yes, I know, but he can't, he's dirty. Rich man says, thank you, Dwarkadish, for finding me the thief. And he says, he wants to tell him, it's not the thief. So he's stuck. What can he do? Sailor is brought and he's arrested. And at that point of time, just when the sailor is going to walk out, Dwarkadish decides, I have to make it right. Because if the Lord was here, the Lord would intervene. And I know I can answer to the Lord. Immediately, just as they were going to walk away, the deity speaks. And they almost faint. Deity says, no, it is not the sailor. The sailor is innocent. Let him go on his journey. It is that poor man who ran away with your wallet. Please chase him. So rich man comes to Dwarkadish and says, thank you, Dwarkadish. I don't know what I've done in my life. Actually, he hasn't done anything to deserve this. But I have deserved this. Thank you very much. He walks away. In the evening, real Dwarkadish comes. And sweeper Dwarkadish comes down. So Dwarkadish said, how was your day? So the sweeper said, I thought it would be easy. But now I know your days are not easy. Every day I think sweeping work is much easier. Less tension, less headache. This one all the time I have to smile. You know, even if people come and they are nonsense, still I have to smile. They ask so many silly things, still I have to smile. Still I have to just stand there. But I did one good thing. So Dwarkadish says, what did you do? I thought I told you not to do anything. Then he explained the whole episode. And Dwarkadish got very upset with the sweeper. He said, why did you do this? Why could you not just obey the plan? The plan was for you to bless. But he said, but that was not their plan. Surely you did not have this for their plan. And Dwarkadish said, foolish fellow, you did not have faith in me. Daily you were sweeping the floor, but you had no faith in me. You thought everyone who comes, I don't understand their hearts. You thought that I don't know what is in their minds. This rich man, the man, this sweeper thought, now I have to advance some arguments. He said, the rich man, Dwarkadish, gave you crores of rupees today. How can I just deny him? But Dwarkadish said, do you know that crores of rupees is all stolen money? That you don't know? Do you know that crores of rupees represent a fraction of his wealth? What he's putting in and what he's asking from me is highly, highly different. He's asking so much, but what he's giving is so little. You don't know that? He said, okay, never mind. The poor man, he may be poor, but just one piece of coin he puts in, what is he? How can he do that? And Dwarkadish said, he's so poor that that's his last piece of coin. And despite not having anything in his pocket, he's putting this into the undil because he has the faith in me, not this rascal businessman. So then he said, okay, now what about the sailor? Sailor didn't do anything at all. Dwarkadish said, the sailor may not have done anything, but you don't know that if the sailor were to get on that ship and the ship went into the ocean, the sailor was about to die in that ship because of terrible weather. But because sailor was devotee, I was going to save him. And I gave him the benediction that I will save him. But now, you silly man, the sailor, if he had been caught, he would have gone to jail. He may have been making noise and wondering, why, Krishna, you're putting me in jail. But he would not have realized, it doesn't matter, that I was saving him from a greater calamity. The poor man came and I gave him the benediction because I stole from the rich man to give to the poor man. That wallet should go to the poor man because he will use it in my service. But this rich man was just wasted. I was going to reduce the rich man's karma and save him from his terrible karma, give more to the poor man and save the sailor. And you just cancelled everything out because you thought you knew my plan and you thought you could plan. So like this, we are full of planning, Maharaj says. And planning is the monopoly of the subtle body. The subtle body always wants to plan. Planning means desire. The moment you plan, Maharaj says, it means desire. Nobody plans when he has no desire. Isn't it true? Such an important point. Someone who has no desire, he has no plan. His only plan, so to speak, is to be with Krishna and continue his duties. Maharaj said, one who doesn't plan, no meetings, nothing, he is actually doing devotional service. When there are meetings, then there is no devotional service. Because meeting means social intercourse. And where there is social intercourse, there is nothing to be relished actually. Nothing. So, we don't know what Krishna has in plan for us. But we should desire, the only desire the subtle body must carry with it, is that we desire to accept the plan of Krishna. Whatever Krishna wants to plan, let him plan. Our duty is to accept it wholeheartedly with our mind, our intelligence and our ego. If we do that, then whether or not we are successful, it does not matter. But Krishna is Bhava Grahi Janardana. He takes the essence of a devotee's mentality. Prabhupada writes in the purport, devotional mentality. He doesn't say devotional heart, doesn't say anything else. Mental, why? Because we know how dangerous this mind is. So whatever mentality you're using for devotional service, Krishna will take the essence. That's all. Just imagine, Bali Maharaj prays in his prayers in 8th canto, that he just desired to obey, to offer humble obeisances to Krishna. That's all he desired. He could not do so because he was bound, first by the ropes, and before that, because Sukracharya and everyone were by him. But despite his desire, Krishna fulfilled and gave him all benediction as if he had done it already. What does that show us? That we have the chance to transform our desires into Krishna conscious desires. Krishna conscious desires doesn't mean desire for ourselves, but it must mean desire for the spreading of Krishna consciousness. If we have that mood of preaching, if we have that mood to become the best instruments we can become and to lovingly cooperate, then the subtle body will not give us problems. It will not. I just want to end by just keeping one point in mind. Maharaj drew a thread of connection between this verse and the verse in 7th canto, 6th chapter, 19th verse. 7.6.19. If you read 7.6.19, it is very nicely stated. It is a prayer by Prahlad Maharaj. And Prahlad Maharaj chants very nicely that, my dear sons of the demons, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is the father of all living entities and he is the super soul of all super souls. Then he goes on to explain what is the implication of that. He tells his demonic friends, he says, consequently, because of that, there are no impediments to approach Krishna. There are no impediments to approach Krishna. He goes on to say, there is no impediments to pleasing him or to worshipping him. Neither is there going to be any conditions to pleasing him and worshipping him. Whether a child or an old man, it doesn't make a difference. There are actually no conditions. Why? The relationship between us and Krishna is always a fact. There's always a fact. Then he ends by saying, therefore, there is no difficulty in pleasing the Lord. It's a very, very beautiful verse. Very beautiful verse. And Maharaj brought up some, just two, three gems of realization that I want to share with you on this point. He said, what do we understand when we know that the subtle body is not belonging to the material body? What do we understand when we say that actually it is a fact that there is nothing to stop us from worshipping Krishna? It means this, he said. He gave the example. Child is here, father is there, or mother is there. Child doesn't need any training to walk to the mother. No labor is required. He doesn't need to do anything extraneous to walk to mother. No separate endeavor is required. It is natural for the child to just walk to the mother. No separate effort. Maharaj said, that is the meaning of fact. Any endeavor which is natural is a fact. Any endeavor that actually does not require the meetings, the discussions, but which automatically arises in our hearts, that endeavor is a fact.
is a fact. If you really think very seriously about it, you realize what Maharaj was saying was, don't complicate the matters in devotional service. The impediments in our devotional service are all concocted. Because actually it is so natural, more natural for us to walk to Krishna than it is even to walk to our parents. Because Krishna is the original father. Original father. It was so easy for Ajamil just to chant Narayana and go back to Krishna. It was so easy for Gajendra just to remember the prayers of the Lord in animal form and be saved after 1,000 years. Nobody in the history of Vaishnavism, Maharaj said, has ever had to do something more than to realize that they have an eternal relationship with Krishna. It is our conditioning, Maharaj said, that is a problem. And Maharaj ended by saying, a fact is a fact when there is no endeavor in it. If there is no fact, then we will labor. That's why Maharaj said, material civilization, we are laboring like anything. We are foaming in the mouth like anything, because it is not a fact. It is not factual. It is not reality. It is actually illusion. It is actually illusion. And Maharaj ended, I remember, by saying very nicely, you cannot undo a fact. The sun will never stop shining. Water will never stop flowing. Whatever you do, sun will rise. You don't have to undo that. But we have to undo everything that we do materially. Do and undo. Maharaj said, the cockerel will crow perfectly at the right time. You don't have to tell him GMT time, you know. India time, you have to crow like this. Abu Dhabi time, you crow like that. Wherever he is, Mangalati time, he will just standardize himself with that and he will do it. A mosquito doesn't need a landing pad or an airport runway to land. No, he just takes off and he lands. But for us to land a plane, millions of dollars have to be spent. So much endeavor. Because we were never meant to land planes, we were never meant to fly these planes. It was not meant to be. And the same thing Maharaj said, to study Bhagavatam, we don't need Bhakti Sastri, we don't need Bhakti Vaibhav, we don't need anything at the start. We just need to sit down and start seriously reading Bhagavatam. Then Bhakti Sastri and Bhakti Vaibhav and Bhakti Vedant will automatically come. In a natural way, you will have a natural inclination to go and study more. But if you artificially do it, then you'll find that your study of Bhagavatam is also frustrating. You'll not have the taste to continue. It will become an intellectual exercise. So Maharaj was very cautious to tell us, even in Bhagavatam, we should not make it a ritualistic activity. But it should be something that is natural. And the final point Maharaj said, which I really like, that which is natural, that which is a fact, is pure. That which is not a fact is always impure. And the example he gave is, water's nature is always to run. He said, water will never stop actually. But when man puts a dam, the water becomes still, and still water becomes contaminated. And Maharaj used the pun on the word, when you dam the water becomes dammed. It becomes damned. So if you put all this together in the context of our purport and translation today, we can know the following things. One, we have the knowledge now that the subtle body is the one that creates our material bodies. The movement of the subtle body is dictated by the mind. The mind cannot be controlled by artificial endeavor. It can only be controlled on the basis of what Prahlad Maharaj said. That until and unless we understand that our devotional service is a fact and it is our natural constitution and that no separate endeavor is involved, at that point of time, by following the instructions of Harihi, by following the instructions of Guruho, then we can conquer this difficult mind, then the desires of the subtle body automatically become reduced, and then we will hopefully, Krishna willing, be able to accept the plan of Krishna and to see the cosmic manifestation the way Krishna wants us to see. This is why transcendental knowledge is so important. But as Maharaj always warned us, acting on transcendental knowledge is even more important. Jai Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki
Jai.
Jai Shla Prabhupada Ki
Jai.
Jai Shla Gurudev Ki
Jai.
Jitai Gaur
Hari Hari.
Are there any questions, any comments, Prabhu Smataji's that you have? That you would like to hear you? Yes, Prabhuji.
Little loud, Prabhu. Why you just speak so low always?
It's not private. Please, everyone should benefit.
Studying for the grades and all, it's not aim for more. It's a fact, yes, but the material world now, the struggle for existence is increasing rapidly. It's inevitable that unless you score a certain percentage,
yes,
you are not allowed to enter into the college.
Very good point.
It's impossible almost.
Yes.
It's really becoming impossible. Even for the children,
yes,
they have to work very hard to get an admission. The situation is becoming very critical.
Yes.
At that time, we push the children,
yes,
to study because to survive,
yes,
not for anything else.
Yes.
People are assuming that not for to get more. So in this context, how we can...
Very practical point Sajjan Prabhu has brought up. You know, I'll repeat it. What he's saying is that, you know, in today's age, for example, exams, you know, our children have to study very hard for the exams. We have to push them very hard. And when we push them very hard, you know, we expect certain results naturally, because if they don't achieve those results, then our lifestyle is such they cannot go on to become settled in their life, you know. So how do you put that, or how do you reconcile that in the context of what we have discussed? See, what Bhagavatam tells us is this: no matter how hard an endeavor you work, you all have your own quotas. This is one thing I don't know how to explain to everyone, which is a fact, and which is Ishavasyam Idam Sarvam. The first point, not even the first verse, but the prologue, the invocation mantra of Ishopanishad says Ishavasyam Idam Sarvam. Everything is coming from Krishna. Whatever we are going to get is going to be a quota. It is a quota. You, as Ma said, you break your head against the wall to become a king. If it's not in your destiny to become a king, you won't become a king. But having said that, it doesn't hurt for us, because we are in our prescribed duties, to give it our best shot. We must work diligently and expertly to free ourselves from that activity. So students who are studying, they should work to the best that they can. But the result of what is coming after the best that we can do is not in our hands. So if the children work very hard, it is not guaranteed they will get results, Prabhus and Matajis. That we must accept. If we don't accept that, the basic principle of Krishna consciousness we have missed. And if we lead our children or mislead our children into believing that when you work hard you are going to get good results, that is also a mistake. Maharaj warned me on this point. You can tell Gopal to work hard, he said, but you must also tell him result is Krishna's. Otherwise, child is misled into thinking that the amount of work I put in, the consequent amount I will receive. Ma said, you'll make Gopal into a demon, because only demons think that way. Even the demigods did not think that way, but the demons will think that way. That's why from the start, as Krishna conscious parents, it is very important for us to instill in our children good values of ethics and hard work. That is necessary. But we must also tell our children that it is not the end of the world if you don't get the results after your work. What is the end of the world is, you know in your conscience, I actually only put in 50% effort. Then, of course, if the result is not good, whom to blame? But if you have done 100% effort, you can go to sleep with a conscience that I've done my best and I leave it at the lotus feet of the Lord. And what the Lord wants, I must accept. This is very important. I remember my mother and I were in the same school. You know, when your mother is a teacher and she's in the same school as you, it's very, very, very frightening proposition. Because it means, you know, that every step of yours is being watched. You know, so her name, she was known as Mrs. Raja, because my father's name is Rajagopal. So every time I attended lesson a bit late, the teacher will come and say, Mrs. Raja, your son came late. Mrs. Raja, your son never did homework. And if I was second in class, my mother will hit the roof. I had to be first in class because my mother was teacher in the school. So when I didn't do well in my exams, even though I tried very hard, I would go to sleep thinking, what happened? And at night, after everything is over, my father would come in. he would make sure, of course, mother was not there. And then he would sit down and he would tell me, as long as you can sleep knowing you tried your best, it's not the end of the world. Nothing is the end of the world. What will happen? You'll always get a chance to do it again. Instead, you just pray and be thankful that you have tried your best. For me, at that point in time, it didn't make much sense. But today, it makes full sense.
Yes.
And because he spoke to me that way, I became peaceful. And because I was peaceful, I could concentrate on Krishna. And I could continuously try to do my work. And somehow, because Krishna gave me that quota, I did well in my studies. Not because of my requisite intelligence, but because quota was there. But if the quota was not there, then if my parents could not understand that point, then they would have discouraged me too much. You know, they would have put so much pressure on me that I was not delivering, I would have freaked out. Then to come to Krishna consciousness would be very difficult. To stay would be a dream. So why I'm sharing this with you as a parent is that while we know that there is the exigencies of the material world, surely we know from Bhagavatam that the material world doesn't support our children. It is Krishna who supports our children. It is Krishna who maintains them. We speak Bhagavatam, source of income is not source of maintenance, source of income is not source of maintenance. But when it comes to our children, is it going to be a different standard? Source of income is sometimes source of maintenance. Source of income is definitely source of maintenance. So Shastra is good on the Vyasasan. But Shastra is better when it's applied in our homes. That's why what Sajjan Prabhu brought up is very good for all of us. We must remember that there is only so much your child can do. There's only so much you can do. And if we ask our children to become pure devotees when they're 15 years old, they will turn around and say, excuse me, father, what were you doing when you were 15? You were enjoying life, you were doing everything, walking around, everything. 25 years old, 30 years old, 35 years old, you got slapped around by Maya, now you become pure devotee and I must become pure devotee at 15. This is what children are telling parents today. They are telling that to them today, Prabhu. So I am seeing that in Singapore, I am seeing it in New Zealand, I am seeing it with our God brothers everywhere around the world. And Maharaj's advice is very simple. Please don't expect your children when they are born immediately they have a halo over their heads. Please don't do that. Let them live normal lives. Normal in the sense that they must be balanced. They have to be in touch with material energy. You can't keep them away from it because you are in it yourself. What you can do is you make the stock of your devotional service good and that will protect them. And when they see you being exemplary as a devotee, the day will come in their minds, I'm in difficulty, but I saw Father. I saw what sacrifice he did. I saw how he was always standing and doing deity worship and all. I think I must do it also. That is a fact. That will not be impeded. That will come naturally without separate endeavor. It will become very, very natural. But if you force it, then there will be an opposite reaction. And we will lose our children to the wilderness. So quota is there. Have you not realized every one of us have put in 2 hours of work every day? Don't you realize that for that 2 hours of work, each one of us gets a different result? Why? It should commensurate. It should be all equal. But Prabhupada says no. The man in Calcutta is working very hard. The man in America is working very hard. He's getting more money than the man in Calcutta. Why? Because he has a quota in Calcutta, he has a quota in America. That's the only difference. So that way we should become peaceful. When parents become peaceful, children are less tense. And my understanding is when children are less tense, they perform better. But when they, because our parents' philosophy is not strong in practice, then we lose track and they also lose track. This is my understanding. Because Singapore is also equally a rat race. It is equally a rat race. Is that okay, Prabhuji?
Perfect.
Some yes,
force is required, like Vidurji.
Sorry?
But some force is required from
the
other
side. Of
like
course.
Vidurji forcefully advised Dhritarashtra. That is why he could get liberation in 5 days.
Vidura did not force
but you are not comparing apple to apple, Prabhuji.
Yeah.
Yes, apple and orange. There is no comparison.
Prabhuji, Maharaj would simply tell you, you are not Vidura.
Yeah.
Vidura did not force Dhritarashtra. You have read Vidura's prayers in 113 of Bhagavatam. You have read them. Was there any element of force in his prayers?
It is a forceful.
Huh? How was the force there? What words were forceful, please?
In purport it is there.
Purport is Prabhupada's.
Prabhupada.
Vidura is speaking in translation. So where was the force? Prabhupada says that Vidura spoke on the force of transcendental knowledge, not with the force of words. When you speak transcendental knowledge because you have realized it, naturally, Prabhuji, people will accept it in their hearts. When you are not practicing it, you cannot force it on someone. But when you are practicing something, you don't have to force it. Just by speaking firmly on that, just by lovingly speaking to someone, and of course we need to discipline our children. This has nothing to do with not disciplining our children. Prabhupada said a child needs to be disciplined. We need to tell the child, look, you're not working hard. You have to work hard. That is acceptable. But when he's already working hard, and he's trying his best, and the results are not coming, and then you scold him, and you're very angry with him, then you must take a step back. And you must think carefully, wait a minute, in the context of Krishna consciousness, what am I expecting? If child has done what he can, that is his limitation. He also has his destiny. Maharaj always told us, each of our children have their destinies also. No matter how hard we try to move them in one way, destiny is so powerful they may go the other side. You know, sometimes you go this way and he's going just the other way. It happens to all of us. So in one way, Prabhuji, it is very important for us to exercise discipline over a child. But it is not entirely correct to compare that with Vidura's way of preaching to Dhritarashtra. Because one, the context is very different. Two, Vidura is a pure devotee. Three, he spoke with urgency, but his speaking had potency, Prabhupada writes, because of his realization. And it's very hard for us to compare that level of realization we may have to be able to speak to our dependents in that manner. So for those reasons, it may not be entirely accurate. But the discipline is needed. Maharaj says in Prahlad school, that Prahlad school must be run like a military concentration camp. The first day he told this to all the teachers, half the teachers thought we should resign today. The moment Maharaj was downstairs and you heard the children moving their chairs, Maharaj will stand up and he will walk up. And once he goes up, all before that, of course, one of us will go up, advance notice, you know, and tell everyone, Maharaj is coming. Everybody becomes exemplary. When Maharaj comes up, Maharaj fires everyone. He was exact for discipline. No doubt we must have discipline. But at the same time when he would speak very, very heavily to a child, within the next moment he'll be saying, you know, have you eaten? Come and sit with me. He'll pull the cheeks, you know, the way he normally does, like this, you know. So balance is very important. We must know when to discipline them. We must know when to love them. Because children cannot tell the difference. For them, love is love. But if you become harsh with them, sometimes they don't know what is happening. They become very bewildered. Thank you, Prabhu. Very good point you raised. Very much needed.
No, Prabhu, the point is that you talked about the subtle body.
Yes, Prabhu.
And subtle desires. So they work in such a subtle way that in the name of our children's welfare, what we try to do, we try to gratify our own false ego.
Very true.
That, you know, what is in our heart, that if my son goes to see, for example, IIT Bombay, IIT Kanpur, a very prestigious institution, then people will say, okay, my son is studying in this college, that university. So if we see subtle in our heart, it's not for the child. It's we are thinking for our own selves.
Very true.
And I always say, you know, that I was telling Radhachand many years back, you know, that for me it's not important that they get 90%, 100%. For me, what is important, that they should not be wasting their time.
Yes.
They should be using their time in a right, balanced way.
Yes.
And after that, they may get 90%, 60%, 70%, that's fine. You know. They may not get the admission in the best college, medical college, best engineering.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean that if they don't get the admission in the best engineering college, they will not get the best job.
Yeah, that's very true.
You may pass an engineering
from
the
worst
engineering college.
Yes.
But still, you may stand in a very good position. And I have got my own experience.
Yes.
And so many other people I have seen.
Yes.
But what happens when it comes to our children, we simply ignore our own experiences and be very much critical.
Yeah.
So I think that's, you know, very much wrong.
Very,
we have to rectify ourselves.
Exactly what Prabhuji said is what Prabhupada writes in the purports of the 5th chapter in the Forest of Material Enjoyment. There, Prabhupada writes that the living entity's extension of his ego is actually in his family. Prabhupada is very straightforward on this point, you know. He just shatters our ideas of family, because he says that actually subtly we want to extend the things that we could not do, or the things that we want to do, or the things that we expect, because finally the children are a reflection of us. Which parent naturally, I'm using the word naturally, but it's not natural, huh? Which parent naturally in this material world feels happy when one child, same age, maybe same congregation, has scored very well and gone to a nice school, the other child, mediocre, not so good school? The parent will feel bad for the child, Prabhupada writes, but at the same time, the parent feels bad because his name and fame is affected. See Srila Prabhupada, you know, he just cuts through everything like Guru. So he sees into our hearts, and he realizes very often, we cannot accept the failure of our children, not on account of anything, but on account of how it will reflect on us.
Right. That's the problem. Yeah.
On us.
Now that's killing the children.
Yeah.
That's,
and in the end, the children suffer.
Yeah.
They suffer like anything. Because I became a lawyer, yeah. Gopal must become a lawyer. If Gopal becomes an artist, oh, he's a failure. Maharaj really scolded me on this point. It never happened, but even then he scolded me, because I think he knew it will happen, you know. He said, now don't think he must become a lawyer. You know, if he becomes a full-time devotee, don't even in your dream stop him from doing that. I thought, okay, what to say, you know, that is his benediction. But it's very true. We want to live through the eyes of our children, through the souls and through the bodies of our children. And we feel that they must fly our flag. Because finally, have you all been in schools where you find when exams come, the parents are more in the exams than the children? They are the ones suffering, they are the ones having all the symptoms of, you know, pressure. It's true, you know. We are all now actually studying more for our children. I give you a simple example, Mataji. We had a spiritual retreat. Huh? We had a spiritual retreat. Spiritual retreat in Singapore. 2 days at the beach. And we had organized an art competition for the children. The children are supposed to draw. We send them into the rooms. I started looking in. The parents are helping to draw. When all the papers came out and we put them up, we had a panel of senior devotees to judge. The moment they judged one, some Mataji stood up and said, no. Her mother actually drew it. And we saw the same Mataji drawing for the son. And then finally, you know, Narasingha Maharaj was there, you know. He said, you know, this is forest of material enjoyment in spiritual retreat. He said, because even in a spiritual retreat, we have this I cannot lose attitude. You know, we are in a spiritual retreat, what are we learning? It's just healthy thing for children to draw, but there also competition is there. I have to make sure my child draws nicely, your child's Krishna is not bending properly. All these accusations came, and for a day some Matajis did not talk to each other. They did not talk to me also, because they said, you chose the judges. Can you imagine? And that's why I sat with Narasingha Maharaj, and we had a very good time reading. In the night we read The Forest of Material Enjoyment, to find out how the living entity extends his material jurisdiction across the world through the agency of his family, his wealth, his acquisitions, his sons, his daughters, his wife. It is a fact of material life that we have to be very careful. It's a challenge for all devotees. But it can be conquered if we conquer the mind. If we just become very simple in our attitude. That's why Maharaj said, it cannot be a fact. Maharaj gave the example, you know, Nehru, I didn't know this. Maharaj said Nehru's ashes were thrown over a field. That was his last wish. So the airplane had to be arranged. Then the route had to be charted. The one person had to bring it. At the right point, they had to throw the ashes. Maharaj said all this shows that it was not a fact that his ashes had to be thrown over a field. The ashes were just supposed to be thrown into the water. But so much endeavor just to fly over to throw ashes on a particular field. The moment we have to endeavor very hard separately, we can come to know immediately that that is not a fact. That means we are not serving Krishna. We are serving our senses. This is a very, very useful barometer, indicator to know where we stand in the devotional service. Thank you so much. This is the way, you know, through the discussions, the persons who ask these questions, they are very kind to us. Because by doing so, they are speaking up our minds also. That's why those who speak they carry with them a great risk. The risk is the same as the risk of the devotees in Bhagavatam. You know, Bhagavatam people said, oh, why Arjuna is lamenting, why Kunti Mata is crying, but they don't realize that until they take this role, we are not going to learn. That's why, thank you for asking these questions, raising these points, because the truth is, it's happening in all our hearts. It's whether you want to have the courage to bring it up, or you want to just couch it. Jai Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki!
Jai!
Jai Shla Prabhupada ki!
Jai!
Jai Shla Gurudev ki!
Jai!
Jai Gaura Premanand!
Jai!
Jai!
Jai
Shla Gurudev ki!
Yes, Prabhu, Prabhu wants to ask one question.
Sir, if time is there.
No, of course.
First of all, thank you very much, Prabhu, for such an enlightening class.
No, thank you, Prabhu,
and
for sitting through the class.
You have opened it up with very, very nice point, actually. You said that we are here because of all our intense desire. And you know, you brought also one very nice point saying that we should have unmotivated desires always. And I think yesterday Prabhu also asked you know, this question, like, you know, it is said that to maintain material attachment, even after hearing so many instruction on this point, still we are not able to figure this out. And as you know, Prabhu said that when we are in the Bhagavatam, or when we are in the company of the devotees,
yes,
that moment of time, you know, like we are beyond all this you know, unmotivated desires and things like that. But later, as you know, because I noted this point, you said that when we are in the company of the devotees, we should be very, very cautious that what we do, what we speak. But sometimes what happens, because each and every individual are unique, you know, is unique. They have unique sets of desire, unique sets of interaction and all this thing. So while we deal with other individual, sometimes we come across so many things. So how to actually understand that our interaction with them,
yes,
or any meaning, you know, relationship that we have them with them, is it due to maybe motivated desires, or due to envy, or due to compassion, or due to, you know, sometimes you feel something you know, something going on where you want to, meaning, you know, share something or realize something. So there is a very, very thin line to understand whether it is hidden motivation, it is some agenda, or, you know,
yes,
to-do list in our pocket.
Yes.
So how do we really focus on that particular scenario or situation, that we really go through the proper channel, taking shelter of Krishna and devotees and Guru Maharaj?
Yes. Prabhu, Kunti Mata said, Bhutanam Yan Mitaha Kalihi, in 1st Canto 8th chapter. She said this point to say that where there is social intercourse, there will be dissension between the living entities. So if we socially interact with each other in a situation which appears to be spiritual, then the result of that interaction will cause dissension. So when there is disagreement between two persons, then it is understood that the way they have interacted has been on a social plane, not on a spiritual plane. The other point Bhagavatam tells us also is we should avoid intimacy. Intimacy simply means, in the material world, intimacy is a good point. It means I'm very intimate with you, I know you, you're very close, we're good friends. But in spiritual world, intimacy means we are relating to each other on bodily platform, based on what I want from you and what you want from me. When a devotee tries to serve another devotee, he should be prepared to tolerate whatever the devotee gives him and take it as a test. If a devotee is harsh with him, if a devotee is unreasonable with him, then we should be prepared to expect that these are all there for me to increase my tolerance, increase my understanding, purify myself. If we can have that in mind, then when we interact very freely with devotees, we won't get hurt. But most of us can't do that. So that is why the acharyas tell us that our interactions should only be confined as far as possible to the points where we are trying to help and assist and serve each other in Krishna consciousness. Beyond that, if we sit down, we will move into the realm of material energy and start speaking on the weather, on this, on that, of who came for the program, who did not see, who spoke, who said this, who said that, and that becomes dangerous. But to avoid that is not easy, because it is our material baggage. We all love to gossip. We all love a spicy tale about a devotee, you know. It's always fun, you know. Otherwise life is so boring, you know. Everyone coming, all sadhu sadhu, you know, chant, have prasadam, go back. You mean nothing is happening in this congregation. This is what we, because we are in social circles. So when devotees come together, it is always safe that we should always be treating each other as Prabhu and as Mataji. That word should become very important. Very important. Otherwise what happens is we just enjoy. Maharaj used the word Prahlad. He said Prahlad means what? Pra means, the root word of Pra is Prabhu. And the root word of Lad is Ladini. Ladini means the living entity's potency to enjoy. So everyone wants to enjoy. We want to come, mix with someone and exploit so that we enjoy. But we cannot enjoy that way. The real enjoyment comes when we consider someone as Prabhu. Then our Ladini, our mood of enjoyment is channeled towards service. That is why Prahlad is known as Prahlad. Because he wanted very much to serve Krishna and serve Narada Muni, his spiritual master. And he is the exemplary way in which we should relate. He was associating with his demonic schoolmates, but he was not playing games with them. He was always focused on talking about Krishna Katha. So in the beginning it may be artificial, you know, that we meet and we talk about Krishna Katha. Sometimes we'll think, oh Prabhu, you're trying to be smart, is it? You're trying to show me how much you know, huh? Okay, fine. Let's be realistic. Let's talk about the weather, your work and this and that. But he only wants to talk about Krishna Katha. But after a while, you realize that it actually benefits us. That actually, Prabhu, is there some verse, Prabhu, that you learned I'd like to hear? And you'll speak. And then you'll say something I learned from there. I'll say something you learned from there. Then when we leave the house, no fight is there. No problems is there. Otherwise, Maharaj said, just don't speak. Just be silent and chant. That is better. But if we have to speak, that does not mean that if we have material problems in our lives, we don't discuss it with the devotees. Because if we don't discuss material problems with the devotees, we'll talk it to our friends and our relatives, and they will give you material solutions to material problems, and that will kill you. If you turn to a devotee and say, Prabhu, I have this problem confidentially, I'd like to speak to you, that devotee should interact with you to give you, to share with you his experience in how to counteract this problem, or bring you to a more senior devotee, more experienced devotee, or your spiritual master who can help you show the way out of this problem. But he should not, now you have told me this problem, very good. Now 10 people will know your problem. That also we should be careful. Yeah. So these are small things, but very important things, guidelines Maharaj gave on how we should avoid the social intercourse. But at the same time, we should always be very careful how we mingle. That's why you'll find, Prabhu's Mataji's, a congregation is a successful congregation. When devotees come together, have prasadam, have program, and then hari bol. Leave.
Yeah.
Don't hang around. The longer you hang around, the more the chances of all of us talking nonsense. Because we're not at the pure devotee level. 1,000 years, Prabhu, we can sit, Naimisharanya, and talk. We can't. After a while, we're going to talk nonsense. Before that happens, we leave. In Singapore, we are quite lucky. In Singapore, our programs are in a temple. So temple hall means by 9 o'clock, everything must shut. So while they're having prasadam, you know, by 9 o'clock, they have prasadam and they talk about the weather. They have prasadam, they talk about this, that, you know. But they're not honoring prasadam. So by 9 o'clock, our quota is we start offering half the lights in the hall. Everyone gets the message. Quickly, quickly. You know, that's when you stop talking and have prasadam. So then they have prasadam quickly and they leave. And we just chase everybody out, shut the doors of the temple. See you all tomorrow morning for Bhagavatam. Come in the morning, finish, shut all the lights, close the door, please leave. See you next week for Bhagavatam discussion. Hari bol. It's much easier. Much easier. So these are some things I can share with you. It's not perfect, but it will help us. Anything else anyone wants to share? Prabhu, please.
Regarding advice on right affliction of the mind, there is a situation.
Yes.
Where we are just assembling for the glorification. Miss Maharaja or Senior Brahmachari or like you, Senior brothers are assembling here for glorification of the Lord.
Yes.
And there is another situation where devotees are engaged in some services for afternoon program or evening program or
yes.
some services. So that time, how we should apply our mind? Generally, devotees want some smarter devotees. How they can do that so that he can go and spare in the time for Bhagavatam or some lecture. So how we should apply our mind in this both situation?
You're speaking of a situation where you have to do some service outside of hearing, is it?
Yeah. No, Prabhuji, I think his point is
what
that
is his
like
point?
Bhagavatam is going on and he has to do some service like cooking in the kitchen.
Okay.
So what he should do? He should be in the kitchen or he should be in the Bhagavatam.
Okay.
Or sometimes he may find a smarter devotee who wants to hear Bhagavatam.
Yes.
So he will put him in the seva, in the kitchen. Okay, Prabhuji, kitchen seva is also important.
Yeah.
And he himself goes for the Bhagavatam.
Yes, yes.
That's so what is right or wrong? Right? Is that right,
yes,
Prabhuji?
Yes. How we should put our mind in such situation?
Well, ideally speaking, you know, if we can avoid doing any other seva while Bhagavatam is going on, that would be best. If all our cooking and all our arrangements are done before, then we are fully concentrating on Bhagavatam, it is good. But sometimes in festivals, for example, I find that doesn't happen. That's why festivals are mad days, you know. They are mad days because it's the day when I find you can least remember Krishna, unfortunately. Because the tendency is we have to look to the public, we have to take care of that, we have to take care of this. So at that time, what should we do? That's why our festival should become simplified. The main point of the festival is to remember the Lord. We must make our programs in such a way, if there's Abhishek, those who are assisting in the Abhishek, concentrate on the Lord. Those who are sitting to observe Abhishek, take darshan of the Lord. Then Abhishek is very peaceful. Then of course Matajis have, sometimes you have no choice. You have to do the cooking and all, and class is going on. But Maharaj always said, don't feel morose. Because as long as you are cooking for Krishna and you're remembering that this will please the Lord, then full import of what is happening in Bhagavatam will be revealed to you in your heart at the right time. Maharaj gave this benediction to all our god sisters in Singapore. Because every time they had to do prasadam, roster was there. You know, festivals means 1,000 people coming. So many Matajis are involved in the cooking. Inevitably, they can't see everything, can't be in all the program. But Maharaj said, no. This is where Krishna will always compensate, you know, and allow you, because of your sincere dedication to his cause, he will allow you full knowledge. That's why Maharaj said, Krishna looks out for not the person who is giving the class. He looks out for the person after the class who is cleaning when everyone else has gone back. Maharaj said, he is the one Krishna is very, very excited about. Because he is the one who has really put devotion service in practice. From start to end, his service is complete. This is just an indication to show that, frankly, at the end of the day, Prabhuji, service is absolute. You know? But if you know that you need to hear Bhagavatam, and if you know that you may not be competent enough, and you really want to take shelter of Bhagavatam, arrange your life in such a way that you are there to hear the Bhagavatam. And if you can't, tape it, sincerely go back, hear it. That effort pleases Krishna very much. That's what I can understand. You know? Gaurang Prabhu is such an exalted personality. He has so much seva for Radhanath Maharaj. But you know, for this recent Pune Yatra, Prabhuji? Or was it in Mayapur
Yatra?
His main service, and most of his yatras, what is his main service? He's in the kitchen. This time I know, because Yamunacharya Prabhu and all the others were with him. And he was there for the whole day and the whole night. But he never lost out on what Maharaj was speaking. Never his consciousness was disturbed. In fact, the whole kitchen of devotees felt, you know, that whole Bhagavatam was going on in the kitchen. Because he was concentrating on what was being spoken. So devotees know exactly the point that service is absolute to Krishna. It doesn't mean we need to choose a higher service or a lower service. But if we continue sincerely in our service and we make Bhagavatam the center, the cornerstone of our activities, Bhagavatam will rearrange our lives for us so that we'll be able to sit and hear.
Just
yes, Prabhu.
Because you brought this point, this time when we went for Maharaja's Vyas Puja just 3 weeks back,
yes,
I went to meet Gauranga Prabhu. He was actually in the kitchen cooking and he was not for Maharaja's Vyas Puja function.
Yes.
He just came to offer his offering.
Yes.
At that time he was there. So I just told him again, because I had witnessed him few yatras cooking, so I told Prabhu, it is very, very, meaning, you know, astounding to see you know, doing this kind of service and still. So he told to me, and therefore I am telling this, he said, Jaake Abu Dhabi ke devotee se batana, yes, chahiye.
That means?
I will speak in English. He said,
yeah,
that please tell the devotees in Abu Dhabi, because he came here and
yes,
everyone, you know, was mesmerized by his class. He said, tell the devotees in Abu Dhabi that this is the fact. What is going on,
yes,
actually?
Menial service in devotional service is very important. What did Guru Maharaj tell us? Bhagavatam on one hand,
broom
or duster in the other hand. Don't forget what Prataparudra did. Prataparudra was chasing after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Just he wanted to take darshan of Mahaprabhu. But so many times Mahaprabhu rejected him, even when all his associates begged on his behalf. But Prabhupada writes, the final turning point when Mahaprabhu's heart melted to receive the darshan of Prataparudra was when he took the broom and he swept the floor in front of Jagannath. Today, when we sweep the floor in front of Jagannath, we consider ourselves VIPs. We put the nice band and we say, oh, senior devotee, sweep, 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 you know. But Prabhupada writes, in those days, it was unmanageable for a king to come down and sweep. And when Mahaprabhu saw Prataparudra sincerely sweeping, not because it was a ritual, oh, now we have to sweep, but because he saw there was dirt, he had to sweep. Then his heart melted and he felt, now I must give him some mercy. And on the strength of that menial service, Prataparudra managed to sneak in to the garden, disguised not as a king, but to sit down and massage Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's feet. And the moment he started massaging Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's feet, he did not speak to Mahaprabhu. He chanted verses from Bhagavatam to Mahaprabhu. Tavakata amritam krishna jivanam kaviviriditam kalna sahasranam sharanamangalam srimadartatam guvigrahantiyed bhuvidachana. So what does that show us? It shows us that both must go hand in hand. You must have Bhagavatam and you all must be ready to get down on your hands and your knees and dirty yourself. A devotee who has both, he is a balanced devotee. He is a devotee who is dear to Krishna. The natural extension of Bhagavatam is menial service. And the true product of menial service is sincere study of Bhagavatam. They go hand in hand. Thank you for a very nice question. We should end now?
Yes, please. No?
Thank you, Prabhu Swataji. Once again, you know, I pray to have all your association. Please keep up with this fire of devotional service. We may be talking about so much unmotivated devotional service and we may think it is a dream. But Maharaj always told us that in devotional service, nothing is a dream. We must aim for the highest point. Then only we will move somewhere. If we always say that we are very humble, then it is an excuse for us to continue remaining where we are. Time to be humble, be humble. Time to work, please don't say you're humble. This is what Maharaj said. That is also false humility. Huh? How long, Maharaj said, we are going to just sit down and discuss and not act? How long we are going to chant nice shlokas very beautifully like parrots but not put them into practice? How long we are going to say this realm of unmotivated devotional service is beyond me? Have we lost faith in Guru? Have we lost faith in Parampara? If we think we will have to reach unmotivated devotional service, then we are wrong. Because on the strength of our endeavor, we cannot. But if we firmly believe we are coming from Parampara, then Parampara will do this for us. We have to act according to their instructions. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Bol.
Jai Shri Prabhupada ki jai.
Jai Shri Gurudev ki jai.
Yeah, I know.
पहले वहाँ हमारे लोग आपस में बात करने
को पहले आसपास से घर वहाँ पे करने करने पास में से चलते हैं घर शाम में हम आते हैं घर है ना फिर आते हैं सीरी में आपके घर में चार पांच घर है ना
ब्राउन व्हाट टाइम यू डीजी
ये किसका हो
इसका हो ना बस हार्ड डिस्क में नहीं है वो इस दिस मुझे अभी कल यहाँ से निकलने दे आधे घंटे में मेरे
से स्टॉप कर दिया
Ma, ma, ma.